Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for our fifth Peloton Hall discussion. This time we're going to be talking about how to support the learning process for our school-aged children and teens during the COVID-19 pandemic. My name is Tasha Berner Horvath, and it's an honor to serve as your assembly member for Encinitas, Carlsbad, Oceanside Vista, and Camp Pendleton. You know, when I took office, I never thought I'd be leading during a worldwide pandemic. You know, the governor, we all know, declared a state of emergency due to the coronavirus in early March, and I was proud that I voted to fund $1.1 billion for California's coronavirus response, which included $100 million for our California schools. It's reassuring to know that this was a bipartisan, unanimous vote from both houses of the legislature. Our efforts to prevent the spread of the novel coronavirus seem to have been working. However, it's essential that we continue to practice physical distancing, staying home, wearing our face coverings when we're in public, and of course, our good practice of good hygiene, which as parents we always teach our children. And I think the good news is we've made enough progress in our regional battle to curb the spread of the coronavirus in California that it's now possible to begin a thoughtful, data-driven, and phased reopening of our state's economy. Tomorrow, in San Diego County, some low-risk retail stores such as bookstores, clothing stores, florists, sporting goods stores, and others will be able to open under a framework approved by our county board of supervisors earlier this week. It's curbside pickup only, and I know for some people that's a little too little and some people it's a little too much, but I think this very thoughtful opening is really the start of the beginning of this process. It's going to be a while as we learn more about the coronavirus and as we, you know, make sure that we flatten our curve, that we don't see further spikes that really endanger our friends and our neighbors and our elders. So we need to continue being committed to preventing the spread of the virus, particularly to those who are most vulnerable. But I also am a parent. I recognize the hardships that a month and a half of this closed economy is causing many of us. And this disruption to our daily lives presents challenges, some big and some small, and they differ from family to family. I see it as my job as a legislator to ensure everybody knows how to get the help and where it's available. I know from all the calls we get to my assembly office that many of you are on this call are worried about your kids and how to make sure their education continues under these really unusual circumstances. So today, we've invited several experts to provide you with some advice and guidance on how to support your child's learning and how to support your child's success during this time. So I'm happy to have us with here today, Tony Thurman. He's the California State Superintendent of Public Instruction, former assembly member, and actually Tony's brother lives in Carlsbad, so he's actually part of our local North County family. We have Colleen Hervey, who's the president of the 9th District PTA. Most of you know I got my start 5 years ago as a PTA mom trying to get a stop sign near my kid's school here in Leucadia. And so I always appreciate the insights that we have from our PTA leaders. We have Christina Homan, who's an education specialist from Oceanside Unified School District, and it's Teacher Appreciation Week, so we need to make sure that we thank all of our teachers for the pivot they've done to going to distance learning. It's really been amazing. And we have Dr. Ann Bird, who's a child and adolescent psychiatrist from UC Health. And I think it's really important when we think about our children's success, we also remember their emotional success. And so they're here to provide guidance on how to further the learning process in the midst of the pandemic. But before we get started, I want to let everybody know a little bit how our telethon hall works if you haven't tuned in before. Each expert will share a little bit about their work in the education space, their role in the statewide, the regional, the local, the school-based shift to online learning, and common questions and concerns they're hearing from parents, guardians, students, and faculty and teachers. Afterwards, we'll ask some questions that you, our listeners, have submitted via email. We got a lot of questions, so I really appreciate the participation from our community on this. To make sure our panel can be heard by everyone, all the participants, all our listeners, are in the listen mode. If your question is not asked today, please rest assured my staff will follow up with you directly, and we'll also have future Teletown halls where we will do our best to address them. So I'm going to let our experts introduce themselves now. tell you a little bit about their background and expertise and how they're working to assist our students. So we'll start with the superintendent, Tony Thurman.
Good evening, everyone.
There you go.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Assemblymember Bonner-Harvath. I appreciate your leadership during this time and for putting this town hall together. I know that you've made it a series, and you know, nothing is more important than how we educate our students. So I'm grateful to you for your leadership, and I'm grateful to those who are on this town hall. You know, I just want to start out by saying this is an uncharted time. We've never seen anything like this for most of us in our lifetime. And the manner, as the assembly member said, the manner in which everyone, 6 million students, have pivoted to a kind of distance learning. And by that, I mean simply that the teacher and the student are in different places is remarkable in and of itself. And I know that there's some bumps. It's certainly not perfect. But it is the best that we have right now. And I'm grateful for everyone who's made the shift. And I want to thank parents and our students and our educators for their resilience. And some of you may have been with us just a few minutes ago. We did a virtual support circle thanking teachers and offering support. Some of you might have been on our call last week that was co-sponsored by the PTA, a virtual support circle for parents. We know that this is hard. There's no playbook for this. And the advice that we give everyone is to do the best that you can. There's not going to be any penalty because these are circumstances that no one could have, anticipated. And the best example that I can give is for our seniors and how all of our universities, UC, CSUs, private universities and colleges have all suspended the SAT and made it possible for students to be admitted into universities because what's happened with the coronavirus is out of our control. The most important thing we can do is just continue to promote safety, social distancing. Again, I want to thank everyone for what you've done to make distance learning happen. Obviously, we got challenges. We have a lot of students who don't have access to computers and internet, and I've named a task force that's focused on closing the digital divide. I've also named a task force that's addressing learning gaps and learning loss that has occurred or been exacerbated during this time. And I want you all to know that I've created a task force that is focused on all the questions that people have about how schools can open and reopen, but putting safety first. We will not open a campus unless we are certain that they can be open safely. And for those of you who don't know, you know, California allows school districts to make their own decisions about when they will reopen. The governor is not going to make an executive order opening the schools. Unfortunately, I cannot in my office do that. But what I can do is give guidance to all 1,000 of our school districts about how to safely reopen. And that's what my task force on the reopening of schools is doing right now. And so stay tuned. We're happy to give you updates. And you can always go to our website or our email to send us information at COVID-19@cde.ca.gov. Again, assembly member, thank you. I'm going to hold on the line in case you have specific questions that you and your constituents would like me to address. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Tony. That's great. And I think that's so wonderful that you started out your statement with saying these are unprecedented times. There is no playbook. I think, like, even for myself as a parent, when the kids went to distance learning, I just thought everything would continue happening as it did before. And then it was different. And so we're all learning together, and I appreciate your leadership with the task force. And I know some of my colleagues are on that, and I hear really good things back from that. So that's great. Let's go to Colleen with the 9th District PTA for an introduction. Colleen, you want to unmute yourself?
Yeah, sorry. Boy, I said some really great things right there to myself. Hi, I'm Colleen Hervey, and I'm the 9th District PTA President, and I want to echo the words that Superintendent Thurman just expressed to thank Tasha for the opportunity to have this conversation and to offer this resource to parents who we have heard from, who are struggling, overwhelmed. Some are really thrilled with what is going on. And as PTA, we are fortunate to be able to partner with the superintendents on some of the task force at the state level. And I just wanted to give a little bit of background on the PTA in California, that we're actually divided into 27 regions throughout the state, and these are referred to as districts. So 9th District encompasses all of San Diego County and Imperial County, and there are 341 schools that have PTAs on their campuses with their PTA leaders. So I've been a PTA member and volunteer since 1994 when my first child entered kindergarten, and I joined because I believe in the mission of PTA, which is to positively impact the lives of all children and families and to advocate on their behalf. All 5 of my children attended and graduated from Vista Unified Schools, and I'm currently a substitute teacher in the district. I've had the opportunity over the years to serve on education committees at the school level, at the county level, and at state level, and I can't overstate the importance of parent voices and the impact that parent engagement has, as we are really finding out, sometimes not by choice right now. We have to be so engaged, especially during this pandemic, and ensure that our children are feeling safe and secure and supported. And I'd like to just applaud the teachers. I can't even express how grateful I am to the way that they've pivoted so quickly and readily to digital learning. And also, I wanted to applaud parents for ensuring that their children are continuing to learn at home, whatever that looks like. I know there are lots of different situations, and it's great that parents are being able to partner with teachers and be the coaches for their children, and I'm happy to be a part of this conversation, so thank you.
Thank you, Colleen, and I like that description of parents as coaches. I have some friends that say, well, I'm homeschooling your kids. I was like, well, you're not really putting together the curriculum. I mean, the teachers are still teaching. But I like that idea of a coach. As you know, I have a 9 and a 12-year-old. And so I like that analogy. I think I prefer that analogy to the idea of homeschooling, because the teachers are really doing so much. And I think it gives me a better context as a parent of what my role in the whole distance learning is and helping our children be successful. Now let's move to Christina. Christina is one of our teachers. So happy Teacher Appreciation Week, Christina. You can go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thank you so much. Hello, community members, and thank you, Assembly Member, for having me. It's a pleasure to share the teacher perspective and offer ideas for how to best support our students during this time. I am an education specialist at South Oceanside Elementary School, and my passion is supporting neurodiverse students and students with challenging behaviors so that they can access their public education through inclusion. And at our school site and school sites all over North County, teachers, counselors, psychologists, special education support providers, administrators, classified staff are all working tirelessly to go above and beyond to support our students and families during this time. Everyone in the education profession has pivoted and changed the way that they do their job with the flip of a switch. No prior notice, no time to even process what had just happened. We just approached it with an open mind, flexibility, and the tenacity to do what's best for students. We are striving to fight the inequities that have been highlighted by this crisis and provide access to high-quality public education that all students deserve through building stronger partnerships with families to support the whole child. While many schools and districts are calling this time and method of teaching remote teaching or distance teaching, I've been personally calling it crisis teaching. There was no planning or training to provide distance learning. We jumped right in and thrown into a crisis where we're all doing the best we can with the resources at hand. Teachers grabbed what we could from our classes with limited time, not knowing what we might need or not even need. And during crisis teaching, different teachers who are providing different things and will provide instruction and social emotional support based on our own strengths and opportunities and resources that we have available to us. Crisis teaching will not be the same as the regular in-person teaching. It's just different, and it has never happened before in our history. So we're all in this journey together. Teachers are not just providers of content. You can get content anywhere now. Teachers are creative artists who help develop learning experiences with a repertoire of skills and pedagogy for students to access and engage with information and content. The key word being engage. Students need to interact with content in a variety of ways, hands-on opportunities, discussion with peers, thinking critically about it, relating it to their personal lives, figuring out how to apply it to the real world. So when teachers have to adjust teaching and learning to online and all of the best practices that we usually apply in our craft can't be done on a screen, it doesn't always translate to the same 6 hours a day of direct instruction. So to transform from being a teacher to an inspiring online instructional expert that creates, develops, produces, and interacts with digital content is overwhelming and totally different position in itself than our typical classroom roles. But we are excited for this new adventure, and we are all learning so much. And with that, it's an honor and a privilege to be an educator in our community. And I thank you and look forward to answering questions from the community to offer guidance on how to support your child's learning at home.
Christina, thank you so much. That is such a beautiful description of what a teacher is. My mother was a lifelong teacher, and I think she would be inspired to hear those words. And I think as a parent, I hear those words and say, you know what? That is what you're doing. There is content everywhere, and it's actually creating the engagement around it that creates the learning opportunity. So thank you for framing it in that way. And now let's move to Dr. Baird for your introductory remarks. And again, Dr. Baird is our child and youth, our child and adolescent psychiatrist from UC Health. Thank you.
Hi there, everybody on the call. I really appreciate being invited, being part of this. I've actually already learned an awful lot from my co-panelists already, so that's great. Yeah, so I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist. I'm also a pediatrician as well, and I work at UC San Diego Health in our Department of Psychiatry, where I direct our child program. And my team and I, we see a ton of kids and teens with really a whole range of mental health, emotional, behavioral learning kind of struggles, and we provide therapy, family therapy, and medications if needed. And these days, the majority of our visits have transitioned to telepsychiatry, which is a new thing for us, a lot of new things happening of recent. We're definitely also in uncharted territory with the overwhelming, mental health impact that COVID-19 has had and, will continue to have for us as adults, as parents, and how it's impacting our kids. It's really like nothing we've really ever experienced. I think kids being at home and participating in distance learning can be pretty tough. Obviously less access to extracurricular and less social opportunities. And I'm hearing a lot of mixed emotions from the kids. They're excited to not be at school, but then they miss their friends and their teachers, and they're sort of disappointed that events are canceled, and they're often kind of bored and scared. And I think parents are pretty strained as well, keeping kids occupied and keeping them safe and keeping them supported through their schoolwork, as well as often, holding down full-time jobs, and add in there the fear and worry of the actual COVID infection. We can't avoid that. It's in the news headlines all the time. And this leads to a lot of strain on family dynamics and can lead to some conflict and a strain on our kids and how they regulate their emotions. And I've been seeing this a lot in my clinical practice, talking to families about what's normal and when they might need to get some expert help. And so, I'm pretty honored to be on this town hall. I learned today just now that it's Teacher Appreciation Week, so that's great. I really appreciate teachers. I'll also throw out there that May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and so I'm happy to answer any questions as I can about our kids' emotional well-being during all this.
Thank you, Dr. Bird. I think that's a great way to frame it, is that we're all going through the stress, and I think you've so accurately described the emotions that I'm hearing from kids and from parents around the COVID-19 pandemic. So thank you for that. So now we're going to go into a set of questions that we've collected. We had a lot of questions on a lot of different subjects, so we're going to try to get to a number of topics. But let's start with Superintendent Thurman. Tony, could you give us a brief overview of, you already talked about your task force, but what have you been doing with education What advice can you give parents about what to expect towards the end of this year beyond just opening and closing? Because you said that was a district-specific thing. But what could parents expect for the end of this year? And then there's the $8 million question of what does next year look like?
Yes, thank you, Assemblymember, for the easy question. but the most important thing, the advice that we always give the parents is just do your best. I have two teenagers who attend public schools, and they are just they're scared, they're stressed, they feel disconnected. It is hard for them to understand what's happening, and they have questions about when it's going to end. And as a parent, I feel so vulnerable that I can't give them an answer about when it's going to end. But I can tell them how to be safe. I can tell them how to minimize the risk. And we always talk about the things that we can control. And that is, we wear masks, we wash our hands, we exercise social distancing. We try to exercise every single day. I found myself becoming dad and PE coach. I take a lot of my calls while walking with my daughters, and because we're getting in physical exercise, and they get mad at me because I wake them up at a regular time every day, because as our doctor said, structure is so important during this time. Eat well, sleep well, good structure, good activities. And so it's important for us to just listen to students. And as it relates to the work, we always say to parents, do the best that you can. No one's going to be penalized. Most of our school districts have moved to a place of making decisions based on, pass, not pass kind of framework, because they understand that there is just, we in parts of the state, we literally have thousands of students who haven't checked in at all because their families are scrambling to get basic needs. We have discrepancies in what students get. Some students receive, a webinar every day with their teacher, or their whole class is on a Zoom platform or a similar platform. But so many students don't have access to those tools, and so they're getting old-fashioned paper packets, which can be done. Computers are important, but a computer cannot replace a great teacher. A computer is simply a tool to help connect our teachers and our kids. And again, just want to reiterate my appreciation during this Teacher Appreciation Week for all of the great work that our teachers and educators do. And so our office, since March the 13th, because that was the day when the governor made the executive order to give flexibility to school districts to move into distance learning, our office has been putting out guidance, kind of instructions to school districts on how to carry out distance learning. And we've been saying, because our public health officials have told us that it's not likely that our students can return to campuses before the end of this school year in a way that would, keep them safe. And so we've been telling districts that they should continue to utilize distance learning through the end of this school year. We know that as we enter the end of the school year, and every district's a little bit different, some are ending in May, some go through June, then there will be a time for districts to make a decision if they're going to have any kind of summer programming. There won't be a mandatory summer school, but many districts are considering using kind of enrichment programs during the summer as a way of addressing learning loss or learning slide. We call it different things. When students are out of school, sometimes they experience a kind of learning slide, and because some school districts have had to wait to start their distance learning, there are places in the state where our students will have missed as many as 50 or more days. And so to address that, and to address what we've always had, an achievement gap that impacts a number of students from disadvantaged backgrounds, many districts are thinking about doing enrichment during the summer that gives students a chance to address learning loss. It's a tricky thing because the state's struggling financially, and the assembly member, we should be grateful to your work, assembly member, to make sure that as soon as we went into distance learning, your action and the action of other legislators provided hundreds of millions of dollars to make sure that our schools had the money that they needed for distance learning and for computers and for, gloves and masks for the people who provided the meals. I mean, we're providing meals at 5,000 locations throughout the state, because some of our students get breakfast, lunch, and dinner at school. And so likely what's going to happen is some districts will have summer programs that address learning loss, and then districts are going to do what they've always done. They'll take a little break, there'll be a summer break, and then they'll take some time to plan about when school will reopen. And so right now the question about when schools open has a lot to do with what public health officers say, but ultimately what your local school boards say about when they want to do so. And the governor did make a statement about trying to open early, maybe in late July or early August, as a way of addressing equity and helping parents to get back to work. I think that was an aspirational goal that the governor set. It is not a mandate. So anyone on this call, I want you to know there will not be a statewide mandate for when schools open. Rather, local districts will continue to make their decisions, and the California Department of Education will provide guidance on how to open those schools. And we built that guidance based on listening to teachers. We're lucky to have a great teacher on this panel. Thank you for what you do. And we'll listen to teachers and psychologists and principals and superintendents about how to build schools back in a way that are completely safe as we answer these questions about how to open schools during the COVID-19 era. So I hope that people will stay in touch with us. We always put information on the California Department of Education website, and you can always email us at covid19@cde.ca.gov if you have questions.
Thank you, Tony. That is very reassuring. You know, we had one of the questions later about governor has said something about, you know, which we'll get to later, about like staggered school start or staggered school in the fall and then 2 weeks early. And, you know, some of our districts want that, some of them don't. So I appreciate you reinforcing the local control aspect in education. I think that's very reassuring to some of our parents and school board members who might be on this call. But you mentioned teachers, so I'd like to turn it to Christina. You know, I think we were on a different call, and you were describing your day-to-day life. And I think most parents don't know what teachers' day-to-day life looks like. Could you describe that a little bit and how Oceanside Unified is working through some of the challenges of teaching that the superintendent was describing?
Absolutely. So teachers right now in Oceanside and many other districts as well, but there's variation between the different districts, are dividing up their day into three parts. So there's preparation, delivery, and development. So preparation is where we're creating all of our lessons and our content and gathering the resources and materials and creating whatever it is that we're pushing out to students and families. And we could be sharing it in a multitude of different ways through Google Classroom or YouTube videos or directed Zoom calls with students. So preparing what we need in order to provide instruction is a big chunk of our day. Then the next chunk of our day is delivery, so sharing it with students and families, being in direct contact with them. So it could be sharing it through email or through Zoom or Google Meets or through YouTube videos, actually pushing it out to families. Or it could be direct contact with families if it's phone calls or emails or different ways that we are directly having communication and connection with the families and students. I know for a lot of our younger learners, a lot of what we have turned into is coaches for parents of how to provide that home instruction. So I know myself have spent a lot of time talking parents through what the different IEP goals are, what the general education teachers are working on, how to best focus and narrow down what their students should work on, because you cannot do everything all at once. And we have amazing teachers that are pushing out so much information and so much content. I know I've heard from a couple of parents that the emails are overwhelming, and the Google Classroom notifications on their phone at 11 o'clock at night when teachers are posting materials can be stressful, but we want to provide as much opportunity as possible, and so it's okay to not do everything that is sent out by the teachers. Just focus on the specific skills that your child needs. The other part of the day is development, so it's training ourselves on our new profession, how to use the technologies that we're working with that we didn't even know existed before, using new opportunities each day to train ourselves to be better educators in this new day and age to educate our students. So I would say all of the educators out there are kind of in those three different parts of their day of preparation, delivery, and personal development. So that's what our days are jam-packed full with, and every educator that I know has worked above and beyond and working all hours of the night and on our devices way more than we should be ourselves for our own health and screen time. So that's what it looks like on the teacher side. So while we may not be having Zoom calls all day long with students, we have other duties that are required of us in order to provide the best instruction for our students.
I think that's so helpful to describe and how you've broken it down, because then it actually makes me understand what I'm getting from my kids' teacher throughout the day. And I think, you know, one of the things I think I learned as a legislator that I think it's important for parents to hear is this idea of when we went into distance learning, it was a turn of the switch, grab your stuff, we're going to go into distance learning. And the teachers and the curriculum had to be transitioned. It wasn't like it was just all turnkey ready to go. And so, and we've seen, I think every parent has seen, every week it's getting more sophisticated and more nuanced and understanding how you're putting that time in to not only do the things we need to do the day, but planning what needs to be done tomorrow and next week. I think that's really encouraging to know that student success will continue to grow as we all grow together. So I think that's very helpful, Christina. Colleen, as the president of the 9th District PTA, what concerns are you hearing from parents and guardians? And is there anything particular that the PTA is doing to support parents and their children during the distance learning time? Do you have any advice for people who are PTA leaders that want to be involved, where they can go? Can you give us some input on that?
Yes, absolutely. So I'm hearing a lot from parents who feel stressed because they feel like they have to teach everything that their child needs to know. And another stressor is not really knowing exactly what their kids should know by the end of this school year. And so I think one of the things that can relieve that stress is going to the website. So at CAPTA.org, that's California PTA, CAPTA.org. There are resources there for the Common Core state standards, and also on the CDE.ca.gov website. They list by grade level, by age, where your children should be and what they should know. The other thing that I would love for parents to know is just take a breath. Know that it's okay to be overwhelmed. It's obviously a normal feeling to have this stress in your life and feeling overwhelmed with all these things that you need to do. But it's okay, and enjoy the time that you have with your children at home. If they're struggling in their classwork with things that they don't like to do, focus on their talents and their strong areas so that they can really enjoy, because their emotional health is so important, as well as yours. When you have a stressed parent, as we know, the children feel that stress as well. Some of the things that I've seen our PTAs do, we've had to pivot as well. We are used to meeting in person, and there's been fabulous activities that have gone online. I have loved the examples of teacher appreciation ideas. One school was doing a health and fitness week, and they had put out on their Instagram and social media every day a different thing to wear, a different activity to accomplish with your family together, so that they're being active and getting the exercise that Superintendent Thurman referred to is so important for mental health. And, you know, we're all learning how to advocate digitally, and I see that there is a lot of productivity happening, but we, as well as those in the workplace and teachers who are finding out that this digital world really can take up a lot of your time, we're meeting a lot more often. We're seeing a lot more participation. But so those are some real silver lining in this time. And the other thing that I think is most important is that PTA continues to advocate for the health and well-being of children and families. And there's legislation, I won't go into detail, but there's a lot of legislation being put forward, as Tasha knows, regarding COVID-19 and just things that will be important in the future for our children's learning. And one thing I really wanted to encourage people to do is to contact our federal legislators, our senators and congressmen, about supporting education in the next relief funding package, because we know that there's going to be a huge deficit in education spending next year, and we would hate to see all of the work of these fabulous teachers cut short due to layoffs and other programs being cut. So I just say, parents, you're doing a great job. Know that you know more than you think you know, and you are your child's first teacher. So keep up the good work, and please join PTA. It's really important to have your voices as we advocate for children.
Yes. So thank you for mentioning that. If anybody doesn't know, our congressman here in the 76th Assembly District, we are part of the Congressional 49th District, and our congressman is Mike Levin. I'm sure he'd love to hear from you on this issue, because it is very important that we keep up the funding from the federal level. So so to fill those gaps that we will have because of this pandemic, so we can keep our schools running and keep up the good work we need to do. So Dr. Bird, so let's shift a little bit. Dr. Bird, you've talked a little bit in your introduction about what you're hearing and seeing in your practice during this pandemic. What are your top line pieces of advice that you give to parents who are trying to support their son or daughter or child right now? Like, top line, what are you hearing? What should we be doing? You know, when should somebody know that they need to take a step back or need to get help? Do you have any advice on that?
Yes, don't quite know where to start, but I'll do my best. It's a great question. It's an important question. It's a big concern for families. I think COVID has, you know, churned up a lot of anxiety and trauma for everybody. And you know, when kids lose that that kind of anchor of school, which, you know, sometimes can mean that they temporarily lose some kind of extra services, then, you know, symptoms of depression or anxiety or learning struggles can relapse, and kids can struggle a little bit more. So really important just to keep a real close eye on your kids, you know, check in with them, see how they're doing, ask them. If you have a mental health provider for them, you know, keep going to those appointments and making those appointments. It gets a bit challenging with the telepsychiatry, but really important to keep doing that. You might find that you notice some changes in behavior or emotion with your kids these days with everything that's going on. You might find that they're more irritable or snappy or clingy. They might come to you with a lot of worried questions, maybe perhaps be a little bit more tearful. Kids are falling back onto kind of old habits. We call that kind of behavioral regression. The older kids, the teens, can become a bit more withdrawn, can be, can you believe, even more obsessive over their screens. And there can be some, you know, changes in eating and sleeping patterns and that kind of stuff. Now, all of that's pretty normal, quite common. Different things for different age groups. But I would say that if these changes last for, you know, 2 weeks or more, or if there's a significant change from normal, or if there's any safety concerns, then they may need some help sort of managing those feelings. And that would be a good time to kind of reach out and get some professional expert help.
I was on mute. Thank you for that. And I think that's a great indicator, because a lot of what you were saying, what was normal, where, you know, they get a little bit snappier or snarkier or a little bit clingier. Now, those are things that I've noticed with my own children. And so it's good to know that those are kind of normal behaviors that we should expect during this time. I think it's all important that sometimes it's okay to not be okay. And And, you know, I think I do share with my own children, you know, this is what we're doing here and this is what we have. And we always try to find silver linings to this. And some days that's easier than others. But when we go to distance learning, you know, we had a slew of questions and we don't have that much time yet. So I'm going to try to bundle them up into kind of one question, and anybody who wants to can chime in, is some parents and guardians are expressing concern about the differential, and I think it was brought up by several of our experts, the differential in the distance learning experience. Some kids are getting packets. Some kids have teachers who are doing 2 hours of instruction a day. Some kids have 15-minute call on Mondays. You know, there's such a differential. When we look at that, what strategies do we have as a parent if we think we're not getting the version of teaching that we'd like? Two, and associated with that question, what is that going to mean for the achievement gap? If my kid isn't the one getting the 2 hours of direct instruction a day, or my kid is the one getting the packets, is that going to mean that they're not going to be as successful? And that's a slightly rhetorical question, because I think we all know the answer is no, they're not going to be less successful because of that. But I don't wonder if we could get some perspectives on just the differential in types of distance learning that we're seeing right now, and some reassurance to parents about, you know, what that means.
Assembly member, if it's okay, this is Tony Thurman. You know, look, my kids sometimes, when I look at the difference in my two daughters and the amount of schoolwork that they get, there's a huge difference. And sometimes I do worry about that, and I'll just acknowledge that. And then I have to remind myself, it's not about the number of minutes of instruction. You know, California and most states have been moving to trying to focus on the mastery of content. And can students apply it? Do they have practical application? Can they show that what they've learned, they know how to apply it? You know, we often talk about how we teach algebra, and if we teach algebra in a certain way, then there should be practical application for students to know how to use the angles and how to create things and how to design. And so algebra and geometry, you know, should have practical application. You know, one of the things that's going to come out of this whole experience with COVID-19 is we are being pushed now to think differently about how we educate our kids and how we measure what is learning. And so, you know, I think people were already saying focus more on mastery of content, less focus on minutes, less focus on test scores. You know, this is going to push us to have conversations about innovation in education and to think differently about how we measure learning for students. And the key will be this, is, you know, curricula will look different across school districts, even across classrooms in the same school district. What's key is that we provide great professional development to our educators. Our teachers are key. And one of the things I really respect about our teachers is that every year they do a lot of great work to assess where students are anyway, when students rise from one grade to the next. And I suspect there's going to be a lot of that going on whenever students return to class, or even whenever we start the next school year, if we're still in social distancing. Teachers will do some assessment of where students arrive, and will do things to help them to get on grade level if they need it. And the schools will do things to support our students. So as hard as it is, and it's hard for me too, I want to encourage people to not focus on the number of minutes, to not focus on seat time. We want to focus on how kids learn, and just know that educators all across the state and all across this country are beginning to have conversations about different ways that we measure learning, where we put a focus on content and showing that our kids can apply what they're learning. We're not there yet, but we're going to get there. And no matter what your students are doing now, their teachers are able to support them when they arrive at school, assess where they are, and if they need additional supports, they will get there. So,
thank you. I think that's such a great perspective. I actually I got back from Sacramento today. The assembly had their first week back in session, and I went in and talked to my son, and I said, actually, what I care about is that you learn the material. So I'm glad you've just validated my parenting style. So thank you, Tony.
I'm here for you. I'm here for you.
Exactly. And it's good to hear that you're a parent going through this. I think that's reassuring, knowing that our superintendent of public instruction, who's really guiding a lot of these policies, is also a parent and is also struggling just like the rest of us. So that's also very reassuring. I think Christina wanted to chime
together.
In on this, and then we'll go. We are. I think we're going to go to Christina, and then we're going to go to Colleen. So, Christina?
Thank you. So I think as an educator, we know the students and know what they need and don't need at this time. So each teacher is uniquely designing the curriculum and instruction that they're pushing out to students. So while different students may look like they're getting different things, it has a purpose and a reason. And so we are experts at meeting the needs of our children and differentiating our instruction. And so it's a good thing that things look different and that it's not all the exact same thing, because different students need different things to make their own individual progress. And so I think the biggest thing is if parents are wondering, what can I do? What is my child accessing or not accessing? Is to communicate directly with the teacher. Have that conversation of explaining your unique family needs of what you're going through at this time. We have some families where both parents are in the healthcare industry and they have to leave their child with somebody completely different for health protection reasons. We have families that both parents are home all day and able to provide home instruction for most of the day. So communicate with the teachers and get the unique specialized information that is needed to best support your child. That is our expertise, is making sure everything is different to meet every child's needs. So keep that open and clear communication with your teacher. And we love to have the partnership with families. A lot of times during the school year, we don't have the opportunity or time to really have a one-on-one conversation with parents other than parent-teacher conferences. So this is really a privilege to be able to work more closely with families and coach them through things. So keep that clear communication open with your classroom teachers.
And
I think that's a great perspective. I've never thought about it like that, Christina. You're right. When I would occasionally email my teacher. I would get the weekly, room mom emails. But really the contact was just, four times a year. Or three times a year with the parent-teacher conferences. And now I am in much closer contact with my parent-teacher. That's a great perspective. Thank you for that. Colleen?
Yeah, in fact, that's exactly what I was going to say, Christina, is as I've spoken with friends of mine who are teachers as well, is the importance of that communication between the teacher, because they do know your children. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that this is such a great time for parents to be able to do like the hands-on learning, doing things with your children that allow them to laugh and play together. And they're learning, even though they may not think that this is, a class lesson, but that it shouldn't be that you're so stressed that they're not learning what you think they need to be learning, because that project-based learning is so important, and it can continue at home in a relaxed and fun way. So that's what I would ask.
Thank you. We have so many more questions than we have time for, so I am going to choose one last question. So I'm going to summarize, because we had some questions that people wanted to get to. What to expect next year? I think the superintendent said they're still working it out. They're not sure what next year looks like. Is that correct, Tony?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Correct. I mean, I think most health experts are still saying that we might have to continue with social distancing in schools into the fall. We don't have any precise data yet, but we do need Californians to continue to do what you're doing, washing hands, maintaining social distancing, wearing masks. All of those things will flatten the curve, help us to get back into school safely at the soonest, earliest possible opportunity.
Thank you. I'm gonna try to squeeze in two questions, because I have one for Dr. Berg, because I've heard that from a number of parents as well. What do we tell people? And if everybody can give kind of shorter answers to this, I would appreciate it. What do we tell people? I have parents that say things like, I don't have the time of the day to do my job and also teach my son or daughter and make sure he or she is doing these assignments. Or my kids, they respect my teacher's authority. They're not as respecting my authority as a parent. You know, what do we have advice who are struggling? What advice do we have to families who are struggling to adjust having their children at home while they're working full time? Do you have like some quick advice? I know, Superintendent, you've been kind of clear on this. Like, make sure they're okay. No one's going to get docked. Focus on the learning. Is there any other advice, though? Because I know as a parent, I struggle with this, and I know so many parents are just like, I'm working full-time. I don't even know how to do this. I think that maybe has led to what Dr. Baird had mentioned earlier, that parents are feeling sometimes overwhelmed.
Yeah, I can mention something. It's Dr. Baird here. Schools provide so much, right? They provide safety and routine and structure and a sense of normalcy, and kids get to learn to socialize and problem solve and all of that good stuff. And now all of that is on the parents, or a lot of it's on the parents. So it's not easy. And I think, you know, my advice would be just be compassionate with yourself, be patient, be forgiving of yourselves and your kids, be realistic about your capacity, your goals, have reasonable expectations. This is an unprecedented time. And we all have to sort of take care of ourselves and take care of each other.
Thank you for that. I think that's a really good perspective. Colleen, I think you also had a piece of advice for parents.
Well, I think, you know, like in life, we always have to prioritize, and it's really hard. These choices are really hard. And you just do what you can do. The quick tip that I wanted to add that I've been doing with my granddaughter, because she's out of state, but I have been doing reading aloud on my phone, on my memo, some great books. And so sending it to her, and then she can sit and listen to me read to her while her mom is doing something with work. So engage the help from other family members, friends, neighbors, if you need it, because that's important to reach out.
Thanks. And I think, Christina, you had a quick tip as well.
Yes, absolutely. Again, communicate with your school site education specialist or school psychologist who know your child. They can offer quick tips and resources and behavioral strategies. I could do a whole separate town hall just on behavior strategies for the home, but your school sites have amazing resources if you reach out to the people that are there to support your student at home with their behavioral challenges.
Thank you. And Dr. Baird, one more thing before we go to closing remarks. I have heard so many things from parents of teenagers where I think one of the superintendents I was talking to was saying that their seniors are grieving the loss associated with not having a prom or school milestone events for seniors, such as a graduation ceremony or even promotion from 8th grade or 6th grade, all the while they need to stay focused on the light at the end of the tunnel on finishing their coursework. What advice do you have to those parents, those students who are grieving and their parents?
Gosh, I mean, it's tough. It's a real loss, and there's real grief here. In a way, you sort of have to sort of acknowledge that the real emotions that come along with that. So just talking with your teens about it, validating their feelings, talking through the facts of what's going on and how they're not alone in this, and this is happening across the world. Another kind of just tip and something that I've seen my families that I see here do is they sort of try and find the silver lining in all this and spin it positively for their families. And, they have done things like started family games and dance-offs and getting their teens kind of taking control of helping put together creative family activities. And if you can do this, if you can find the silver lining, and find the positivity. This will ultimately make your kids and your teens stronger and more prepared for future, what the future holds.
Thank you. I think that's some great pieces of advice because I know they're struggling. And, you know, maybe there's a possibility of, you know, what I've talked to folks about is there's a possibility. I know today I just recorded for our Vista graduating seniors a message. So I think there's a ways of doing, creating new traditions and reimagining what this can be during this time and giving them something new that no one else has had before. So that's, again, that silver lining we're looking for. So this has been a super informational and informative and useful discussion. I want to thank all of our panelists for being so forthcoming and honest and just very real people on this. I think that helps us all to connect with you and to really apply some of these lessons to our life. We're walking away with a couple of things that we can put into practice and guide our kids through this time. And I do want to say, we're doing a series of town halls, there's a lot of questions we got that we didn't get to today, but a lot of it centers around what's coming forward next year. And as we said, that right now it's still not clear. Our public health professionals, you know, this is a new virus. We haven't had a pandemic in any of our lifetimes like this. And so as the information becomes clear, we will do another town hall. Hopefully the superintendent can join us as well then as we go into summer and we have a clearer picture about what next year looks like. So, you know, while we may not have that answers now, I think it's important to know we will be providing you with information as it becomes available. So on that, to our panelists, do you have any final thoughts to share or resources that you would like to share? So we'll go in reverse order. So we'll start with Dr. Baird.
I think just want to kind of put out there to remember that your kids are very resilient. It's one of the reasons why I enjoy working with kids. You know, just provide them with an open, supportive environment. Give them your time. Listen to them. Validate them. This is what they need to emotionally get through this. And they will get through this because you're on this call, so you're already halfway there. And the second thing really is just to sort of take care of yourself. You know, kids pick up on our anxieties, and this is a pretty anxious and exhausting time. So be good to yourself, be a good role model for your kids, get the help and support that you might need, and then you can be more available to your kids. In terms of resources, I mean, there's a billion resources out there. I know I often direct families to the ACAP website, which is the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. It's a great website. It gives a lot of information for families, easy to read, easy to find, and links to a lot of other reputable sites. So it's a really good place to start.
Thank you, Dr. Bird. Christina, can you give us your closing remarks from a teacher's perspective?
Yes, I have three key points. Be kind, communicate, and breathe. So be kind to your child during this time and all of the trauma they're going through. Communicate with them about how they're feeling and what they're experiencing, and breathe when they are frustrating you. And be kind to the teachers that are trying to do as much as they possibly can. Communicate with them and breathe when you're getting all those notifications in the middle of the night when we're posting at midnight. And be kind to yourself and your day. Take care of yourself and your daily routine. And communicate your own thoughts and feelings with other people so you're not holding it all in. And breathe. So those are my three points. Be kind, communicate, and breathe.
Those are fantastic points. Colleen, can you beat the 3 points from Christina?
You know, she is a hard act to follow. I just wanted to say that, you know, whatever school looks like in the fall, PTA will be there to support teachers and students, and a great resource for parents wondering about the education system in our state is ed100.org, ed100.org. And then the resource library on the CAPTA website has great activities for kids of all ages and parents. And so don't forget to join PTA at jointotem.com. Thanks.
Thank you, Colleen. And Superintendent Thurman, thank you so much. You have such a busy schedule. Thank you so much for taking time for the constituents and the parents and of 8076 and Antony's Cross, that Oceanside Vista and Camp Pendleton. Any final remarks?
Well, I want to thank you first, Assembly Member, for putting on an important service to the constituents of the 76 and an incredible panel. I'm honored to have had the opportunity to join Christina, a great educator, and Colleen, the PTA is fantastic, and Dr. Beard. I thought everything that you all said, which is fantastic. I would just say I want to echo what many of the panelists have said about be kind to yourself and give yourself permission to breathe. We are dealing with a situation that is literally just unprecedented, and it is worldwide. I had to look up the word pandemic, and it means in its very nature that this is worldwide. And so, I'm so impressed at the resiliency of our students, our parents, and our educators. I know that this is not easy. This is probably the greatest challenge that many of us will experience in our lifetime. But as it relates to rising to the challenge of ensuring our students get a great education, California is rising to meet that challenge, and I'm grateful to all of you and proud to be your superintendent. We can do more together, and we are stronger together, and we will do all that we can for our 6 million students. Be well, and thank you.
Thank you, Tony. I think that's, I always say hashtag better together is my hashtag, but I like stronger together as well. And I want to thank all our panelists for joining us. Thank you to everybody listening in. I hope you gained something from this Teletown Hall. In case you'd like to refer back to what was said or share this information with somebody else who you know think might find it helpful, this recording will be available on my Assembly website at a76.asmdc.org. So a76.asmdc.org. And if you have any issues or questions or looking for resources, please, please, please call my district office. We're here 7 days a week. The phones are being answered 7 days a week at 760-434-7605. And please watch your inboxes and social media for my next Teletown Hall. And on that website, we do have a COVID-19 page. You're going to find this recording, and we're going to also list out a lot of the resources that our panelists talked about here today. So thank you, and be safe and be well, North County.